We've got another big one in the district with Matt Schauf talking ADP values, landmines, and busts. Guys, let's get to it.
Go district, you know the Pope listens. Dynasty, our religion, for the blokes missing on all of these trades, on all of these plays, on all of these grades. By the end of the day, y'all getting played. So what you gonna do next? Try to fill up that flex, send the homie a text. That trash offer's the best. You try to make it complex, then they text you back. Now all of a sudden they don't make any sense. Broaden your horizons, boy. Dynasty's not for the Simons, boy. These trades not for consignment, boy. Respect your opponent, y'all some piranhas, boy. This my advice from me to you. Open up your cute little podcast queue. Search up GOAT District, my dude. Pop it in your ear, man. Y'all know what to do. It's the and I always be trading, trading, trading. And I always be trading, trading, trading. And I always be trading. Y'all try to betray them, but first you gotta bait them, bait them, bait them. Fish.
What is up, Fantasyland? We've got a big one tonight. Matt, we're pumped to get you back in the district. For those who don't know, Matt from Draft Sharks, I'm sure you guys recognize the voice from the fantasy football show that they've got, award-winning fantasy football show. And I mean, Theo, we love the guys that walk the walk, that play the big games. And Matt is a main event league winner on the FFPC. We're pumped to have him tonight. I know you are, Theo.
Yeah, no, I have a great deal of respect for Matt and also, you know, Jared, and a few of the other Draft Sharks guys that have been on the GOAT District a number of times. I got into the DMs, just started talking about this Never Too Early tournament with Matt. And it's awesome to have him back in the district. Always has some sharp takes and always has a real keen eye on the ADP values. So a really good guest to have on at this time of year when a lot of us are in early best balls.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me back on, but I got to say, you're kind of faking me out with the JJ Watt at the beginning of the video there. Start at the bottom. Like, wait a second. Did they bring me on an IDP podcast?
IDP.
We're talking
about an IDP show, Matt.
I did notice you are a two-time IDP ranking accuracy champ. So congrats on that too, man. That's awesome. Very, very versatile, which is what we like, right? And we're going to be versatile tonight. We're going to look at different ADPs. We've got a big 250 buy-in best ball from the FFPC. We're going to use our boy Fantasy Mojo's ADP from the best balls that are running, especially the never too early 125 buy-in right now. And guys, we got a lot to touch. We're going to touch, you guys are going to want to stick around. We're going to touch on busts. We're going to touch on landmines. We're going to touch on values. And we're going to, you know, nitpick at this board a bit.
Let me go ahead and put the board up.
Yeah, do that.
Yep.
That way would be for those that are listening to our podcast audience, make sure you guys check us out on YouTube and on Spotify, and you will get a visual. We'll try to keep you guys on top of what we're looking at. Right now we've got the board from the 250. This is a tight end premium FFPC 1QB 250 buy-in. And Theo, I'll let you start it off, brother.
Yeah, so I was team 12 in this. You also have
that was your team.
You also have a number of you have a number of very, very sharp players in this draft, including our own Dan Williamson. He was team number 5. You also have NFFC Hall of Famer Chris Ebel, Smokin' Joe's Joe Van Gogh, who's a very well-known FFPC player. AJ Hernandez in this. The Shiva's in this.
Our boy, the Shiva. It was
a tough draft for sure. And it was the first 250 offered by the FFPC. I love getting in these early ones, especially the early high stakes ones. It's always a challenge. I hate having to draft against Chris and Dan, but you know, iron sharpens iron in these early best balls, man.
It's funny looking at FFPC drafts because I start. I'll have in mind things that I think are wrong in other ADPs. And then I look at FFPC ADP and I'm like, oh, they're doing it better than what I think is the wrong way somewhere else. So it doesn't take long to look at FFPC drafts and see how sharp the drafting room is in general.
And as a reminder, this is a 28 rounder. So Matt and JD and I have also taken part in this Never Too Early tournament, which is the $125 tournament. that's different because that's a slim best ball. A 28 round tournament, a 28 round best ball with no tournament aspect. Basically, I'm just playing against 11 other guys, so it does change the strategy a bit.
Like, and you've got the kicker, your favorite Theo. The kickers and the defenses are involved in the. You've got a slot for each, basically, in the 28 man draft.
You know me, I like the slims more. Dan Williamson is a best ball purist, but things like being unique, things like exposure to guys, they just go out the window. I'm just trying to beat 11 other people in this draft. So the ADP is somewhat similar, but I do think there's a little more people try to get a little bit more into like that structure here as opposed to the 20 man where you're kind of pigeonholed into a particular structure. Would you agree on that, Matt? 28 versus 20? Which one would you find a little more challenging and which one do you enjoy more?
I mean, I think the key is to just treat them differently. That's one thing that I didn't do, you know, several years back now when I first started drafting best ball, because you're like, oh, I've been playing fantasy for a while. I think I can do fine in best ball too. And it's just not at all the same draft if you're drafting into a best ball tournament as if you're drafting in a single league. And, you know, along the lines of what you said, you're just trying to beat 11 teams here. So you don't need to get crazy different. You don't need to take as many chances. You're still kind of building the same. You see the same kind of structures, but, you know, there's less of an importance of considering zero RB or, you know, just all the different things that you do to try to beat a whole field of teams. So which do I like better? I like them both. It's just important to keep them separated and know what you're doing.
And JD, you bring up the kickers in the defense. I think that's kind of one of the more challenging aspects, I think, is that kicker position, just because of we have kickers, we have, you know, relative certainty on their situation to start next season. But then when you get to like kicker 20 and on,
well, especially when you're drafting in January, like when we were doing the hard way, you know what I mean? Like half the guys are, you know, they don't have contracts in a couple months and they're kickers, right? So you never know. So the trick is you want to kind of go early, right? I don't know. In my opinion, you want to try to grab your kickers early in the earlier drafts. It's kind of like for me, running backs. And then closer to the season, then I'm more ready to invest or to take risk and get them later. But yeah, that's a tricky part. I will just add to Matt's point with the difference in the two. You also, for your bankroll's sake, you want to play both kind of the cash game 12-man leagues and, you know, the tournament leagues, just to kind of manage your bankroll properly. I mean, maybe that's a topic for a different day, but it just allows you, you know, to take those big hits in the tournaments, because let's face it, you've got a higher chance of winning those 12-man leagues, right, than getting the money for those big tournaments. But for me, Theo, those big tournaments, that big prize, that's what gets my blood flowing. And those are, especially this time of year, I love doing those tournaments. And right now, the FFPC's got two great ones.
Yeah, and we have the FFPC ADP from the 125. We're going to be talking about a couple of guys tonight, and we will reference that ADP. But for this 250 I did, the first round was pretty chalky. There wasn't anything really, really surprising. I will ask both of you guys, one player that I see in the first round, Cooper Kupp. Right now he's going at 6 overall in the Never Too Early. In this particular draft I was in, he went 4th overall. Matt, what's your take on Cooper Kupp right now? Draft Sharks, you know, hat tip to you guys. 2 seasons ago when he had his monster season, you guys had him as one of your must-draft guys, your comeback player of the year. That was a real win for the Draft Sharks guys. Last year, he averages like 22 points per game, then goes down, suffers a big injury. What are your thoughts on him right now when you put him into context of being the third wide receiver overall to some of the other situations?
I think he's where he belongs. I mean, I know that there's some mild question on Matthew Stafford. For now, I'm going to treat it as though Matthew Stafford is going to be back and, you know, maybe healthier than he was last year. And like you said, Cooper Kupp, before he got hurt this past season, was leading even Justin Jefferson in points per game. So, you know, maybe it changes as we get into the summer. But for now, I think Cooper Kupp is right where he belongs. I would probably take him behind Jefferson and Chase for now, just because there are fewer questions with those two guys. But I wouldn't drop him any further.
And JD, we talked about him. Like, JD, when you get to like Cooper Kupp versus Tyreek Hill.
I'm taking all those guys over Cup. For me, I was talking about this last night. It's about opportunity costs for me. LA's looking sketchy right now. Stafford's looking sketchy. We don't know what's happening there in that offense. I get it's Cooper Kupp. I guess he's, you know, the guy is awesome. But it's always about opportunity costs, and the higher in the draft, the higher that opportunity costs, you know, plays a big factor, good or bad for you. And for me, I'm trying to avoid those big misses in the first round. I would prefer taking the guys like the Hills, the Lambs, the Diggs. For me, those guys still have that possible ceiling. Especially a guy like Davante Adams, I think that he belongs probably like before the Waddle crew, you know, kind of those wide receiver 1B guys. That's probably where I have Cup right now. And that might be me missing it and missing that opportunity, but I'm fine with it. Again, with the opportunity cost, I think I can get that somewhere else.
Matt, just you're curious your thoughts on CeeDee Lamb with the offensive coordinator change in Dallas, going to shot from Kellen Moore to Schottenheimer, and you know, a healthy bit of Mike McCarthy as well. Do you have any concerns? CeeDee Lamb ended the season on an absolute tear. And you know, he's going right now in the Never Too Early tournament, he's going 13th overall. On this particular draft, he goes 9th. Do you think that's appropriate?
I do. I mean, it's not an exciting coaching change there. Brian Schottenheimer is not an inspired replacement. But I mean, the last time we heard from him, he was basically booted. I guess it was mutual from Seattle because he wanted to throw the ball more than Pete Carroll did, was the story that got put out. So that's good. And CeeDee Lamb did finish last year 5th in PPR points among wide receivers, despite having Cooper Rush for, what was it, a third of the season. So I think CeeDee Lamb gave us last year what we were hoping for if we were optimistic about CeeDee Lamb. So I think he belongs up in that range. And then, you know, I guess we'll see what other signals we get from this new-ish Dallas offense.
Do you guys see anything second round wise? I think that the Dalvin Cook pick was questionable, but do you see any other picks in that second round that kind of jump out at you? I will say that Chris Ebel, who's literally one of the best drafters in the whole country with the receipts to prove it, took Josh Jacobs in the second round, which I think was an interesting pick. He's going 22 overall in the Never Too Early. There are some question marks about where he's playing next season. Where are you at on Jacobs right now, Matt?
Well, what stands out to me about this particular round too is all of the green in it. I mean, you're not going to see that many running backs in round two of any best ball draft, like any tournament best ball draft that you do. So that jumps out. Josh Jacobs, I might take him here or there as RB8. I'm generally out on him where he's going. It's good that he's at least come down some, because in the very first drafts, he was going right around the 1-2 turn. And I mean, it's just a mistake. A year ago, nobody wanted him before round 7. And I mean, even I, at that point, I was like, I like Josh Jacobs where he's going, because there's no risk where you're taking him. All we need is for him to start and he'll pay off. And then of course they turned him into the workhorse. Now people are kind of doing with him what they did with Deebo Samuel heading into last year's drafts, where they didn't like him the year before. Then he gets all this work. Now they love him a little bit too much, and you're not seeing the potential to fall back. So I think, especially without Josh Jacobs currently being on a team, there are too many risk factors for him to be quite that high. And really, I don't like much of that group of running backs. I think Derrick Henry is probably the one that I feel best about after Bijan Robinson. I think Bijan Robinson belongs in that range, but I think beyond those two, I'm not taking any of the rest of them in round two right now.
JD, your thoughts on, we talked about kind of that the running back group. We often see those guys like pushing down a little bit. What are your thoughts on that group of running backs?
Yeah, that was my first kind of observation there. That not only that the big clump of green, but that it's at the front of the second round, right? And you've got a lot of these like ASB, I'm surprised, comes after like guys like, you know, Derrick Henry, Jacobs, the guys that are clumped there. I'm usually an aegis again here. I know as we're talking about vetting running backs and how good they've been, but I'm probably taking more towards the end of the round, like the Breece Halls. The Bijan is usually in the beginning of the second round. I'll have some, but I'm not going to go nuts there. But I do like the Breece Hall kind of at the end of the second, Kenneth Walker at the end of the second. But I do prefer those receivers ahead of a lot of the guys like Derrick Henry. And now we're hearing Derrick Henry possible trade piece, which would be definitely interesting, right? I mean, this free agency and this year with the rookies, and I mean, it's going to be definitely an entertaining summer for us in fantasy land. But yeah, in the second round, the running backs were the biggest question. You mentioned Dalvin for me. Yeah, definitely too early. I don't know if we want to get into kind of, you know, our specific top landmines or bust Theo here, but
yeah, sure. Go ahead, guys. I mean, I'll just make one point is Ramondre Stevenson, I might like more than almost any running back.
100% Theo, 100%.
And you get him around later. So it's definitely weird. But yeah, JD, why don't you take it away with the show title? And do you see any of these potential busts or landmines here besides?
Yeah, for me, it was really you, and you pointed out right away. I mean, as soon as you look at this draft board, it looks out of place. Is Dalvin Cook at the end of the second? I mean, for me, that's way too rich. He's probably not back in Minnesota next year. He's, you know, maybe he goes to Buffalo, something fun, you know, out there with the other Cook. But if you look at 2022 is really his first year where he played a full healthy season, right? And if you just look at, he's had what, 4 seasons now, 1,000 plus yards, 4 in a row. If I go look right now at a list of players, let me read you off the running backs that have had more than 4 consecutive 1,000 yard seasons. You've got Barry Sanders, Curtis Martin, Emmitt Smith, Thurman Thomas, Eric Dickerson, Tony Dorsett, Eddie George, and LaDainian Tomlinson. I don't know if you guys put Dalvin Cook in that classification, but the chances are probably low, especially now with, like we just talked about, the amount of running backs and the quality in the free agency, as well as the draft that's coming up. I think we're going to see a lot of these running backs have roles as opposed to being, you know, these big workhorses. Obviously, there'll be exceptions to that case. But for me, I don't think that Dalvin Cook at this point of his career, even if he goes to another team, I think I don't know if I see him getting this 250 plus that he's been getting attempts the past few years. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the work came down some this past year. I was mostly shocked to see him there at RB11. He's at 501. As RB, what is it, like 20 or something like
44th
that?
44th overall the last 2 weeks, and he's 44th overall in the 125. So we can team one. This is a bad pick. There's no way around it. It's a bad pick. I'm not sure how you can take Dalvin Cook there. It just seems like it's wishful thinking. I wonder if he was trying to build a stack. And that didn't happen
with the Jefferson. Yeah.
Trying to build a Minnesota stack. I did that. That's the only way I kind of look at it and kind of justify it. But even so, you could have, you know, potentially got him. You're kind of pigeonholed.
The problem with that for me is that this is not a tournament, right? This is a 12-man league. So I get that you're trying to get fancy and do a Minnesota draft or a stack in a tournament if you have many entries. But I don't, in a 12-man league, I'm not reaching for that stack, definitely.
Right. I think the reach is the biggest problem, because I think even in a 12-man league, it can work. Like if they took Dalvin Cook at the end of the fourth round or 501, like that's okay. I still wouldn't love it, but I wouldn't hate Dalvin Cook there, because I think where he's going in general, he's all right. All he needs to do is continue to get that starter level work. And I think some risk is already being built into the ADP, but for sure too early in this case.
Yeah. We're RB17 in the never too early tournament. Just shows you kind of how sharp FFPC drafters are there. I think that it's a little bit interesting that Devonta Smith is still going in the third round and not the second. I'm extremely bullish on him. I think that that's a guy that is super safe right now.
So who would you put him ahead of, Theo? You putting him ahead of Olave?
Well, I think that I'm putting him. I have Devonta Smith ahead of Olave. I absolutely have him ahead of Olave. But
Debo,
I have him, like, to me, he's. I have him ahead of T. Higgins. I think the targets are going to be there. And I think that, like JD, you brought up the fact that this particular draft, the running backs went a little bit earlier. To me, I'd rather have Devonta Smith over pretty much any of those running backs.
What about Garrett Wilson, OTC Garrett Wilson or Devontae?
Garrett Wilson for me.
Yeah, okay.
Matt, where are you at on Devonta Smith? And then same OTC, start out Garrett Wilson versus Devonta Smith.
Yeah, I agree with you on Devonta Smith, and I agree with you on Garrett Wilson just ahead of Devonta Smith. I think the key difference between Wilson and Smith are Wilson is his team's number one wide receiver. Devonta Smith is, I guess, 1B to 1A for A.J. Brown right now. But I agree in liking both of them, and I would take both of them over all those running backs in round two that we were talking about.
One player who to me is a little bit polarizing right now, and in terms of, we talk about landmine, a guy that could kind of shift the draft, Mark Andrews here goes 25th overall in the Never Too Early tournament. Right now he's going 20th overall. We have some question marks about the quarterback position in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson kind of up in the air. Let's say Lamar Jackson is not a Baltimore Raven. Is Mark Andrews this Teflon can't miss top three tight end for you, Matt? Or would you have big concerns about the offense changing stylistically enough to kind of push him down?
I mean, I certainly wouldn't say can't miss, but if they're moving on from Lamar Jackson, then it's probably to somebody who throws the ball more than Lamar Jackson does, right? I mean, they switched OCs ostensibly to get somebody that's going to throw the ball more, because it's tough to figure somebody runs the ball more than Greg Roman. So I think even in the case where Lamar Jackson moves on, I think Mark Andrews is fine. And I wouldn't bet on Lamar Jackson moving on. It just doesn't happen very often. Even if they have to franchise him this year, I don't think it's going to be a franchise and then trade kind of situation. So I just think through multiple scenarios, I'm not worried about Mark Andrews. And he's interesting to me because when I first started drafting, I, like everybody else, you know, I start out with some recency bias. He finished this past season on a cold streak. So I'm like, I don't know if I want Mark Andrews. And then the more I think about it and watch where he's going and watch how far he is from Travis Kelce and even behind TJ Hockenson, sometimes I'm like, wait a second, this guy, if anybody can catch Kelce on the receiving front, it's this guy who has been dominating target share over the past couple of years. They're probably going to throw the ball more this coming season. Even if they don't throw the ball more, Lamar Jackson's probably going to be healthier than he was this past year. So there's so much upside to Mark Andrews. And now that he's not going as close to Travis Kelce as he was, you know, a year ago, I think he's more of a value than a worry for me.
So you're definitely Andrews ahead of Hockenson.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you look at the game splits. I mean, it's actually all over the place with Lamar and Andrews. So he's kind of like, even if Lamar leaves, Andrews is still going to eat in that offense. I mean, who's there, right, guys? Like, let's face it, who's in that offense? You know, Dobbins is back. They've got Andrews eating up those targets. Number one in target share, like you said, Matt, at 29%, even in the red zone, which is, you know, what you want from your tight end. So I agree with you. For me, I see TJ Hawk go ahead of him in a lot of drafts. For me, that's when Andrew becomes a nice value, is when he's the third or even further tight end off the board.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm with you guys on that one. I'm very bullish on Hockenson. Matt, you bring up kind of the cold streak with Andrews to end the season versus the hot streak with Hockenson and how it carried into the playoffs. And I just think that Hockenson as a number two target in Minnesota, I feel more confident in that offense than I do Baltimore. I do think it's interesting with moving on from Greg Roman, the Baltimore offense could be a little more dynamic. And you do bring up the fact that you'd have a quarterback that would pass the ball more. But I don't know. I think if you tell me I could take TJ Hockenson he's going 28th overall in the NTE right now, versus Andrews at 20, I think the win rates might be with Hockenson teams. Do you have concerns about him being tight end three, Matt, or do you think that that's fair?
I think Hockenson's high. And for one, if we look back over the past few years, the tight end that leaps up, and we're looking specifically at tight end premium here, where it's 1.5 PPR for per reception. But if we look at the guys over the past few years that have leaped up from beginning of season ADP to where they finished to the following season ADP, they have disappointed annually. And that's him this year. It was Mark Andrews. Last year it was Kyle Pitts. Last year it's been George Kittle recently, Darren Waller at some point. You know, sometimes it's injury, other times it's situation. But there are, you know, multiple factors that can kick in and kind of chip away at that. With Hockenson specifically, I don't like that he's a whole round and a half ahead of Kyle Pitts and Dallas Goedert. He had his second shortest average depth of target of his career in his time with Minnesota last year. He had his shortest yards after catch per reception. So that to me is telling me that the targets he was getting were just kind of dump offs, check downs, and weren't producing anything. It wasn't the kind of thing that I see them scheming in a lot, at least continuing that going forward. He also had a couple of huge spikes to drive up his production last year. 33% of his regular season points came in two games. And one of those was when he was still a Lion against Seattle. The other, of course, was week 16 against the Giants. So if we take out those two and also take out the two lowest, because I know that it's not always a great idea to say, yeah, if we take out his two best games, he's not as good. Duh. So we'll balance that a little bit. We'll take out his two best and his two worst. Then he drops to sixth in scoring average for tight end premium last year. So like, I don't hate TJ Hockenson, and I would probably mix in some of him if I'm drafting a bunch, but to me, he's the guy up there at his ADP that I think has the greatest risk of falling, you know, just far enough where he disappoints. He doesn't have to be terrible, but if you fall from tight end three to tight end seven, and that's like a two round difference, and you factor in the other guys that you miss out on at the other positions, you know, that could be enough to be a difference maker.
JD, your thoughts, like just looking at this third round, if we exclude the quarterbacks, because I think that's a second question, is there any player that kind of stands out to you as a very questionable pick in this third round, or does it all look pretty clean to you?
No, I mean, as much as I love Debo, one of my favorite players, he's hard to click on in this round. I love, we talk about Stevenson. I mean, Stevenson for me can really jam this year. Like he can really be a top, I don't know that he gets top five, but I have him like top eight-ish around there. Right now, I think that especially if Harris isn't back, we've seen him, you know, with the load, like with the big load, he catches balls. Like he's everything you want. He's not an offense that's going to be launching the ball to Jamar Chase all game. You know what I mean? Like he's a part of that offense. And to me, that's not going to change much. If anything, he'll be more significant next year. So I love Stevenson's upside. Pollard, I love Pollard. Again, we see top five. That's where I do see a top five possibility because we've seen it before with Pollard. Just the injury is obviously a concern. But otherwise, I mean, you talked about Devontae. We talked about Andrews. Etienne, I don't know. Theo, you're a big Jacksonville guy, but specifically with Etienne, he's a big, you know, on-brand Goat District kind of guy. Are you worried with Hasty signing, or do you think that is a benefit to Etienne maybe?
So I think that it's a clear back, you know, it's a clear backup that's not going to challenge him for touches. And I think that's probably a positive where he starts last season with James Robinson in the Jacksonville backfield. Now it's clearly his backfield. I just wonder if Travis Etienne, the bullish case for Etienne, for him to kind of beat his ADP where he's going as like RB11, I think there's two ranges of possibilities. Either they decide to use him more as a pass catcher, or the Jacksonville offense takes another step forward and kind of the pie grows larger for him. I do have concerns that they're not going to use him as a receiver, which I really think caps his upside a little bit for me. So I have a lot of exposure to Travis Etienne in Dynasty. Last year, he was a guy that we drafted a great deal of. But I do worry a little bit just based on how they treated him this year versus the profile that I thought he was going to have, where I thought he was going to be a, you know, dynamic pass catching back. He's a very, very talented running back.
But I moved Stevenson ahead of Etienne in my rankings personally.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Matt, where are you at on Etienne? And maybe a little
Leonard Fournette going back to Jacksonville?
I'm going to guess no on that. I'm not really high on Etienne or Ramondre Stevenson, to be honest. Etienne, the thing that really bothers me is the lack of receiving this year. I mean, he's the clear top running back. He's got a good offensive coach and he's got his college quarterback and he's still not catching passes. That to me says he has to show us that that's going to be part of his repertoire going forward before we can believe it. And, you know, to what you said, Theo, he's got to either catch passes or have great touchdown efficiency because the offense gets better. We know that betting on great touchdown efficiency is not a great idea. It's certainly possible, but it's not something you want to bet on going in. With Ramondre Stevenson, the concern for me, for one, any time that we think we know what Bill Belichick's going to do, that's when it changes. One thing we have seen is over the years, he does not like to lean on a single running back. He was forced to at points this year when Damian Harris was out. But when Harris was back, it was pretty even, the workload between Stevenson and Harris. Even if Harris is gone, to me, that doesn't say, okay, now they're just going to lean heavily on Stevenson. Maybe they do. But I think he's going early enough that I'm not scared of missing out on what he can do from there. Like if he goes from a round three pick to like an early round two value, I don't think that's killing me by skipping out on him. And on the other hand, if they work Pierre Strong in more, if they import somebody else in the draft, I just think that there's at least a solid chance that they add somebody else in there. So for where he's going, there's a bit more risk to him than there is fear that I got FOMO, I guess, is what you're supposed to say now. I don't have any FOMO on Stevenson.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I do think that there could be I still think that there's a little bit of a fear in drafters' minds that it's too good to be true. Bill Belichick usage for a running back, that was obviously not his historical way he treats his running backs that we saw last year with Stevenson. And it was kind of a perfect storm where Harris missed with an injury. But I think he showed enough, and I think that the offense is going to take a step forward. I don't know. I'm pretty bullish on him. I think I'm with JD, and I think that he's actually a pretty good value. So we'll kind of see how the summer goes and how the Patriots treat the running back position. But if it's Pierre Strong and Harris as his backups, I think I'm fairly confident in Stevenson where he's going at this point. If they do bring back, and that was Kevin Harris, not Damian Harris. If they bring back Damian Harris, or if they end up with an intriguing running back, because I think one thing about this offseason, 1912 in the chat says Leonard Fournette will be a Patriot. This offseason is going to be wild with the running backs because it's going to be such a market that's preferential to the teams as opposed to the players, just because there's so many running backs that are going to be drafted on day two, and there's so many running backs that are free agents, that you're going to see some of these players get boxed out and end up in situations where, you know, there's going to be very talented backups or backups that have been fantasy successful. So I think that'll be interesting to see the way the Patriots treat the RB2. But if it's Pierre Strong as his backup, I'm into Stevenson. And I think he's good value there. He's obviously showed his ability as a pass catcher. And I think that the touchdown upside will improve as the Patriots offense improves. So that's an interesting one. I want to get some questions in about the quarterback position, though. We've talked about for months here, we've had, you know, I think when Jared was in the district, Jared Smola, one of your fellow draft sharks, JD and I had a chance to sit down with him. We had a chance to sit down with so many of the best high stakes players in the country. And we kind of predicted that there would be a return to somewhat early QB. And we're starting to see that in the never too early tournament. Josh Allen goes 21st. Patrick Mahomes goes 24th. Jalen Hurts goes 27th. In underdog, it's insane.
Matt, tell him about drafters.
Yeah, it's the same.
Beginning of the second.
And drafters, all three of those guys, the top three quarterbacks are going inside of round two, well inside. And yep. you can see Jalen Hurts go late in round one even sometimes.
It's wild. But I think that's the reality. Is those three guys are going to be
so early. Let me ask you guys, because we're talking drafters and we're talking about the FFPC tournaments. In these tournaments, right, because I heard Pat Corain, and we had Pat Corain on recently too, like talking, do you dodge the big quarterbacks, you know, or those stacks, like the Kelce Mahomes stacks in these big tournaments, or you have to get like one or two in, right, Matt?
I mean, it depends on how much volume you're drafting. So I guess at some point, yeah, I think you need to. Most of us probably aren't getting to the point where it's a need to. I'm generally avoiding those early quarterbacks. I just don't think that the value's there. I know that if you look at how many top, you know, six or top 3 weeks that Mahomes, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts had this past season, they stand out as the clear values. Joe Burrow is close behind that. But I don't think that we're going to see that repeat year after year because it just doesn't happen. So I think that there's enough change every year at quarterback that it still doesn't make sense to me to draft those guys that early, especially in a format where I can get three of them and compile weeks. That will be enough.
Yeah. And I agree in a 28 man best ball, I don't go early QB. In a 20 man though, where it's a tournament setting, I don't mind taking the first three. I think that it does a few things to your build. You avoid landmines, which is the third round historically does have landmines. You also have the ability to kind of punt QB2 down to a certain level, which structurally I think that offers some appeal.
At least for sure QB3.
Yeah, 100%. If you take one of those three guys, I don't take a third quarterback in a 20 man. And even in some of these 28 rounds, once in a while, like I did in this one, I'm going to go, you know, hyper fragile at QB anyway. So that's maybe just the way I draft. I think that my concern would be Joe Burrow going where he's going, where I just think he lacks the potential upside that an Allen or a Hurts would have. We know we love the weapons in Cincinnati. I love the talent of Burrow. But I think when you're talking about Burrow getting pushed up to this level, he's going 33rd overall in the Never Too Early tournament, which is only six spots behind Jalen Hurts. To me, if I'm going to spend that kind of capital on a guy, I really want the rushing ability to be a little bit more than Burrow would offer. I think that you're banking on Burrow having just an enormous passing season next year, which is absolutely could happen. But I just feel that would give me a little pause. I think it's kind of like when we see a tight end four get pushed up, where
it's the FOMO. It's the FOMO pick. Like you get that FOMO pick. You know, is that for you, Matt, or do you think that Burrow belongs there? Because we talked about this. Was it with Josh Theo that we talked about this, or it may have been Pat? This same conversation. You kind of get the FOMO, and then you've got Burrow, you've got Lamar, and even Justin Fields kind of sneaking in there now.
It's kind of like an artificial market where, you know, it's just like tight end, where you tight end six historically, tight end five, drafting those guys is less of a bet than drafting tight end one or tight end two in terms of like the hit rates. I'm just curious, Matt, do you think Joe Burrow belongs in that truly elite tier, or is it a drop off from Hurts to you right now?
I think he is behind that top three. And I will say in round three, I think it's a little bit easier to justify these guys than in round two. Burrow is definitely the next tier. And I think the reason to not take him as close as he went in this 28 teamer that we're talking about is Justin Herbert last year. I mean, he was the guy who finished third behind Josh Allen and Tom Brady, and then got pushed up into the top three in drafts. And then, you know, didn't have a terrible season football wise, but let us down fantasy wise versus that ADP. And that's the cautionary tale. You know, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts have the rushing passing combo. Patrick Mahomes is a freak. So if you want to tell me those guys belong in round three, I'm not going to argue that one too hard. I do agree that there's more space between them and everybody else.
Dropping down to round four. This is a little bit interesting. Is there anybody that stands out to you as a great pick in this fourth round? Seems like there's some landmines here.
I love DK Metcalf in round four here. He's a round two, three turn in drafts that I've seen so far. Like I'm shocked that he made it this far.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. On drafters, he is higher in the second two, three turn there at the end.
Yeah, I agree with you. DK's a great pick right there.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you guys this. DK or Debo?
DK.
Right?
I probably wouldn't do 100% either way, but it would be more.
But they're closer than they are, right? Like they're around apart right now.
Mm-hmm. It would be more Metcalf than Debo for me, for sure.
Yeah.
They're very close in the Never Too Early tournament right now. They're actually wide receiver 14 and wide receiver 15. So, JD, okay, that could be a kind of a league, you know, altering decision. You're actually going to have that decision to make at ADP if that's your preference. I'll throw in with you guys now DK Metcalf, Debo Samuel, Chris Olave, which are actually going in the Never Too Early tournament as wide receiver 14, 15, and 16. Matt, where would you be at on those three?
It's Olave and Metcalf both ahead of Debo for me. I would, if I'm drafting high volume in a best ball tournament, I would want to get some of all three of those guys because they, I think they all have the upside. Debo showed it to us, not this past season, but the one before. And I think Olave showed us a high ceiling by the usage that he got right away, the production that he did put up when on the field, and just a garbage offense. And then Metcalf has showed us over several seasons what he's capable of.
Olave is just a baller too. It's like right. The eye test matters. And, you know, his circumstance was very bad last year, and he still flashed all those air yards with more, you know, catchable targets. I think, you know, we can talk about Derek Carr. We can talk about a number of guys being the Saints quarterback next year, and we're going to like that situation a lot more than he had this year. So to me, like, he's the one I want of that group. It's a little bit of the unknown upside, but that's kind of like the way we like to draft in the GOAT district, isn't it, JD?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at this round and I'm looking at that Denver running back who like makes you think, oh, look at this. I went wide receiver early, so now I can take my Javonte Williams as my RB1 because he offers you that kind of ceiling. So I'm curious what you guys think about Javonte. I talked about this with Bradley last night on the fantasy best ball show, and it's super risky, right? Because there's a good chance he doesn't start the season. We see J.K. Dobbins coming off of a similar injury and you know, not really helping you till really late in the season. Where are you guys on Javonte? Is he kind of a value? Is he just depends on your build? I talked about, like, if you're going to take him there and you don't want to be super heavily invested in him, you definitely have to build your roster around that. And best ball allows you to do that. You know, maybe you take your next running backs a little earlier than you might. And as opposed to kind of go with that depth to make up for, you know, what you're missing. But the top, you know, top RB upside that you get from Javonte, are you guys avoiding that completely, Matt?
I feel the same way about him right here as I did Dalvin Cook in round two. I would not take Javonte Williams here in round four in this particular draft because there's no way I would take him over DJ Moore, over Amari Cooper, over Chris Godwin, some other guys that are still on the board. At his ADP, when he's late round five in the tournament drafts on FFPC, when he's RB19 overall, that's where I think I would take some, especially because he can get into round six. And if he gets into round six there, I think he's intriguing. We just got an update from the GM saying he's on track to start the season. Obviously, you know, that came in late.
Of course he is.
We'll see what the track looks like when we get closer. But I think, you know, even that possibility that they feel comfy enough to even say that at this point, that makes me want to get a little bit of Javonte Williams at the cost that he is in most cases.
I agree with you where this is too high. JD and I, we drafted against one another in this FFWC, which is more wide receiver centric than this. But I was able to get him in like the seventh round.
Yeah, that was nice. Falling,
I think that's when you want your exposure to Javonte is when he starts falling. He does have some bullets to dodge in terms of what Denver does at the running back position this offseason. But if there is a clear spacing between him and whoever the RB2 is, then and he comes back, you know, healthy in a Sean Payton offense, there is some appeal. But I do agree with Matt. He's not the kind of guy that I would take in the fourth round. I like the Jahmyr Gibbs pick a lot because I think Jahmyr Gibbs has got the juice. He's got the receiving ability. And I think he will land quite well. So it's like the mystery box of which team drafts him. That's up in the air. But I think that Jahmyr Gibbs could end up in the third round with a really nice landing spot. So to me, I think he's like a value right now. In the Never Too Early tournament, he's going 54 overall. So he was actually taken higher here than you can get him in the 125 tournament. Matt, where are you at on Jahmyr Gibbs?
I mean, I'm still getting to know these rookies, but I think it's generally a good idea to take any of them that you like at this point. I certainly think that Gibbs is going at a nice value spot. Really, I think that there's nice value in a lot of places, round five through like round nine at running back right now. And that's making me even more interested in taking shots on those wide receivers in those first, you know, three, four, even five rounds.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think we'll touch on some of those guys. I wanted to get your opinion. The Draft Sharks were extremely bullish on Dallas Goedert last season. you guys were you Jared on the show had him well ahead of George Kittle, and you could get him at such a discount compared to Kittle. So you guys have the receipts with Goddard. How are you treating him when he's going off the board as right now tight end six, but in this particular draft, it's pretty high up. Do you think he returns value as a mid fourth rounder in FFPC right now?
I think he's fine as tight end six. I won't say I'm bullish on him right now, especially because we can wait beyond him and get Darren Waller. I think Kyle Pitts is interesting in the same range. Like, I'm not sure if I would come out with more Goddard than Pitts, because I think the ceiling is higher on Pitts for our 1.5 PPR format than it is for Goddard. I mean, the ceiling for Pitts is that he's the top target. I know that the competition is Drake London, but he's top target, probably at least a second target. Dallas Goddard's ceiling is third target in Philly this year. So I think he's fine where he's going, but I think it's going to be Pitts slightly ahead of Goddard for me in these formats where we're shooting for ultimate upside.
And then JD and Matt as well, how are you guys handling Lamar Jackson? Right now in the Never Too Early tournament, he's going off as QB6. Do you think that that's something where you want to get shares of him? I imagine that he's going to flip Justin Fields and go up to QB5 if he comes back as a Baltimore Raven. To me, that I think that would be a pretty simple correction. Do you agree with me on that? Do you think that he's a value right now, kind of where he's going, or is he a player you'd be trying to avoid in these early best balls?
For me, he's the first quarterback that I'm really considering strongly. And I think relative to where the market is right now, he's the first one that you could really consider a value, because like you said, he could easily jump to five and he could easily finish two or one. Like he, I think, is the lowest guy that could realistically lead the position in scoring by the end of the year.
And the offensive coordinator change you have to be excited about. I mean, I feel like all you need to look at is the Greg Roman playoff performances, the losses to end the seasons in the playoffs. I mean, you're talking about they were averaging like less than 14 points per game in those losses. So I think Lamar Jackson, a little bit more wide open offense, could be exciting. JD, where are you on Jackson right now?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think he's, like you're speaking dynasty, I think he's a value. I think in some of these drafts, he's a value, especially the guys that he falls behind, like when he's falling behind, you know, I don't know that he's fallen behind Herbert, but he's usually between Fields and Herbert, you know, after the Burrows. So I think he belongs in there. You kind of want to grab shares of each. I don't think Lamar's going anywhere. I don't think Baltimore is going to be trading him anywhere. I mean, it's so hard to get a quarterback, especially when they have one of the top, you know, new style quarterbacks that can actually run the ball and create offense. And I mean, they've built an entire team around this guy. So I don't see this guy going anywhere. I think they're just playing the game. They got the offseason. They're not in a rush. So I do think he's a good get at value. I'm not going to overexpose myself, but especially in drafts where I do end up with Andrews early in these tight end premiums, I definitely like trying to get a stack, going there. And then you can get Bateman late, which is nice as well, with Lamar, and maybe you spice it up with a bit of Likely, later on.
Yeah. The Andrews Jackson stack has made him more interesting to me, and that later, Bateman ADP. I agree. It makes both of those guys more attractive.
Yeah.
Fifth round is interesting. Matt and JD, I want your opinion on Alvin Kamara, kind of the ultimate landmine pick. Right now he's falling in the never too early drafts. He's at 81 overall. He's running back 27. We don't know what the length of the suspension will be. Is this a guy, especially in tournament play, do you want to embrace the uncertainty and, you know, potentially bet on him getting a lesser suspension? Or is this in like a 20 man best ball something you want to avoid completely because you might end up with like an empty ticket, you know, with your selection? Matt, how are you handling Kamara?
Well, I took him in round six of my most recent never too early draft, I believe. So I'm relatively in, certainly not somebody that I'm going to say I'm taking every time, but I do think it's somebody with plenty of upside from that round six spot. He's end of round six in ADP right now. I've seen the videos that are out there. I have a hard time believing that he gets suspended for the season for what's out there, but you know, we'll see what happens from here.
Like half the season, is that still, are you still considering that, or you're good with that at that price?
I'm trying not to assume too much because I really have no idea what the NFL is going to do. So I guess if I don't have a running back at that point, I'm like, all right, Alvin Kamara easily wins on ceiling as my first running back in round six. So I'm going to bet the ceiling there. I'm not going to do it every time because we don't know how low the basement is on him this season.
Yeah. It's trying to guess what the NFL is going to do is just, you know, there's no rhyme or reason with their suspension. So
especially when there's videos involved, right? It's always, who knows which way it's going to go.
Yeah. And also like how the guy has been in the past will factor in the NFL's decision, and Kamara has a pretty clean pass. So I think that there's, I don't know. To me, it's in a tournament, I'm interested in getting exposure to Kamara. I also think he's worth kicking the tires on in Dynasty right now because I think a lot of managers want to get out completely. And I think that he has an RB1 season left in him potentially. I think he's the kind of guy that will age gracefully in the league. You could see him becoming like a James White type as he gets a little bit older because of his receiving ability. So I think that he's appealing to me there. A very interesting topic. When we stay on the fifth round, though, we have this cluster of wide receivers. We see seven of them. Matt, is there a particular wide receiver that stands out to you and one you'd really feel is a risky pick here?
I don't think any of them are risky at the stage where they went here, especially looking at it being round five as opposed to their specific number among wide receivers. I would take Amari Cooper much earlier than this. I would take Chris Godwin a little bit earlier than this. And I think everybody else except Watson, I would take ahead of round five. Watson's the one to me where he would be at the bottom of the group because I have no idea what the target share is going to look like with him. I don't even know who his quarterback's going to be yet. I'm going to assume that it's Jordan Love. It's tough for me to see Christian Watson finishing way above where he's going ADP wise. And it's far less difficult for me to see him falling below where he's going.
What about Pittman?
Pittman has done fine target share wise. I think he's going to get at least as good quarterback play and probably better quarterback play. So he's not somebody I'm excited about, but I wouldn't say I'm worried about him either.
Yeah, I'm probably avoiding, I don't know, Hopkins and Allen in that group. I like Godwin. I think he's a value. Just people are worried about the quarterback situation, forgetting he's been injured for a while now. I love Amari Cooper, man, with Watson. I hate to say, but I just like that offense coming into a full offseason with Watson. You know, a year removed, I think, now from that whole drama and, you know, massage oils and stuff like that. But I think that Cleveland offense just in general can be really good value in these best ball drafts right now.
And just pure fantasy right now, we're looking at quarterbacks getting pushed so far up the board. If we want to find upside later on, I mean, here's the guy that we know has top four upside at quarterback, and Amari Cooper has top 12.
I didn't even notice he went ninth round. That is amazing. I was going to say Kyler Murray in the 10th, but Watson in the 9th is pretty nice value too.
He's QB10 in the Never Too Early tournament. So yeah, he definitely got pushed down in this particular draft. And that was actually, you know, Chris Eibel again with the Watson selection. I think that the DeAndre Hopkins and Keenan Allen ones are interesting because I think there's uncertainty as to where they'll play. I think that Keenan Allen could be a cut candidate. I think DeAndre Hopkins probably will not be a Cardinal if I had to bet on it. So those two guys, it's hard to see them kind of really improving kind of where they're going on, but I might bet on DeAndre Hopkins, you know, landing better.
He definitely has a track record, right?
Yeah, I think that if I had to bet on one of them having a, you know, a big time wide receiver one season kind of coming from this round, it might be Hopkins. I might be a little bit more bullish on Watson than you are, Matt. I know the sample size was low, and I think that it's an unsustainable amount of touchdowns he scored, but he looks the part. He looks so explosive, and I think that there's a chance that he could fall into a really nice target share next year despite the quarterback change. I might be a little bit more bullish on Watson there than like a Michael Pittman.
I'm with you on that, Theo. That's why I asked about Pittman. I'm with you on Watson. I think especially if you look at what he's done versus like comparables with what he's done in his rookie season is pretty impressive. I know it doesn't always tell the tale, but I mean, Does it matter, Matt, you think, if Jordan Love is the quarterback there? Is that what your concern is, or no, is it the player himself?
Yeah, I'm not downgrading him. It's somebody that I wasn't thrilled with as a prospect. I know Jared didn't love him as a prospect heading into last season.
I was gonna say I know Dan was an eye on him.
And I think that, like, he's the kind of guy that I'll take my L on Christian Watson. I wish I had a great deal more Christian Watson. I wish I could trade a couple of, like, I think that'll be interesting this year to see if everybody had George Pickens way ahead of Christian Watson. I'm pretty sure Jared did as well. I know we did. And now I think that where the ADPs converge a little bit more, or will continue to separate. I think that was one where if I could trade a few of my Pickens shares, and I'm not anti George Pickens, but I just think Christian Watson at a certain point, he looks more explosive than other NFL players. It's just wild. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Tyreek Hill's rookie year. They're different kind of guys. But in terms of just pure explosiveness, I think it's something I don't want to ignore, especially in the tournament setting, because I think Watson, the range of outcomes could be pretty exciting. But yeah, that's an interesting one. Curious your thoughts on Drake London, Matt. He's a guy that I've been drafting a great deal of. I know you brought up Kyle Pitts. London was a very young rookie. He flashed, and especially to end the season, he was getting a pretty high target share with no Pitts there. I believe he was like 9.5 targets a game over like the last 4 or 5 games of the year. Where are you guys at on London? Do you think wide receiver 24 is a good value? Do you think it's a little bullish?
I think it's fair. So my two concerns with him are how much passing volume is there in Atlanta, and who's the quarterback going to be? And I think those are two big questions, especially when you look at who's around him ADP wise. Like, he's right behind Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, not far behind DJ Moore, who I would very easily take ahead of Drake London. And then, you know, some other solid guys behind him. So the one thing I'm not going to do is say, yeah, but those targets that he got late last season came with Kyle Pitts out, and then downgrade him saying he's going to lose that target share with Kyle Pitts back, because that's the mistake I made with Amon-Ra St. Brown, saying, sure, he was a target hog here, but these guys were out and now they're back. You know, maybe there will be some cases where that proves true and you have to build in the regression, but I think Drake London's going late enough that there's some of that built into it. And there is something to be said, regardless of who was hurt, for a guy as a rookie garnering that much target share. He did some at the beginning of the season, then there was a long gap where he didn't, and then he got it at the end. So I think we should believe in that. I think he's a very good player. I think they'll figure something out at quarterback where it's not going to be worse than it was last season. So I want to have a little bit of Drake London, but it's a little bit tough to go crazy on him just in the range where he is at wide receiver.
Yeah. I talk about this often. I love guys that finish the season strong. Like, if you're looking at the previous season, especially young players, rookies, right? I made the comparison last night. Like, it's like, if you follow charting at all, it's like when you pass through resistance and then you come and retest and confirm support on a graph. I don't know if that makes sense to anyone, but I know Snowman was in the chat and he was loving that. But it just, to me, it just confirms that these guys, you know, given the opportunity, and maybe that's what it is, right? Okay, you think when Pitts comes back, it changes, but maybe London just now, it's his time to shine. He's a rookie, right? He's getting more opportunity at that chance. Keeping it basic, I think it just makes sense for him to shine at that point. So I don't think it changes with Pitts coming back. I don't know what happens with this offense at quarterback. I think that's kind of what is throwing me off. Like, is Desmond Ridder going to just come in and evolve into something great for this offense? Do they make a change there? Do they bring someone new in? There's so many ways this offense can go, but for sure, London and Pitts are the two targets there. We talk about narrow target trees, and you definitely want a part of that. I think London's a nice value in that range.
Yeah, maybe, you know, and that's a guy that I really, really, really disliked this season. Arthur Smith, maybe there's a little self-scouting this offseason in Atlanta, and he says, I have these two unbelievable, you know, prospect guys. Let's change the offense slightly and be a little more aggressive through the air. Wishful thinking, probably. Matt, you brought up the appeal of the running backs in rounds 5 through 9. We start to see a few of these guys in round five, but we see four of them go in round six. Why don't you talk about some of the guys you're bullish on that you see as values in this group of running backs?
Yeah, and so the guys that I was talking about in that range are really more by ADP because the whole position got pushed up in this draft. And for me, the key, if you are in a draft where something like this happens, where we get a whole bunch in round two and then others get pulled up in round three, round four, and behind that, like, don't chase that. Don't say, yeah, this is my next guy at the position, and since they're going earlier, this is where he's going to go. That's where I would counter and say, all right, fine, I'll take the wide receivers you guys are letting slip, and I'll just wait and I'll stack up these other running backs that I don't like as much on their own.
That's a great point.
It's going to be good.
That's a great point.
So looking, you know, ADP wise, I think that when we get into the range where it's from, you know, Javonte Williams is in the mix, Aaron Jones and Dalvin Cook to some degree, Joe Mixon too, they're going late enough where I consider them, but even them I'm okay passing on because of what's still there. J.K. Dobbins I don't love, but in round six, I think he makes sense. Alvin Kamara we talked about, Cam Akers, again, don't love him, but his ADP is 701. Overall in the never too early tournament. So he doesn't have to be awesome from there. James Conner, I spent last offseason talking about him, and apparently I'm going to do it again this year because he's RB26 in the middle of round seven right now in these FFPC tournament drafts. He finished RB18 in total PPR points last year, despite missing four games, finished RB10 in points per game. After he returned from missing three games with injury, he was top 19 in all the remaining eight games, despite the Cardinals falling apart, top 12 in five of those games, top six in four of those. They're still paying him a bunch of money, so I still think he's going to get the ball plenty. If the concern is that they bring in somebody else, yeah, they're probably going to bring in somebody else, but that just means he goes from 95% snap share, which was he was getting at the end of last year, back to like 70 where he really should be. So he's somebody that should get drafted earlier than he is. And somebody that I have to remind myself to draft because I get locked into reading these ADPs right now and picking guys where they're going instead of saying, these don't treat these ADPs like we do the August ones. There's this, I'm blanking on the term right now. Oh, an anchoring effect. There's an anchoring effect where we see the draft position, we see the ADP, and we're like, oh, this is where he belongs. Oh, I can get him there next round.
Ball there.
And all of a sudden he's gone. Instead of saying, I think James Conner belongs up here, so I'm going to take him up here some, maybe right here, and I'll get plenty of them. It's important to not follow the ADP too much right now.
I love the usage of the anchoring effect term too, Matt. Yeah. That's a great big picture best ball term to think about at this point. I have a couple backs I want to get your opinion on. Damian Pierce, Tyler Algier, and Rashad White. Algier and Damian Pierce had a great deal of success this past season. Algier ended up with over 1,000 yards rushing. Damian Pierce was on pace for that. Ends up in the 900s due to injuries at the end of the season. Those guys are day three draft capital guys. They have bullets to kind of dodge here. Rashad White just saw Leonard Fournette get cut this week. Rashad White is the de facto RB1 in Tampa Bay right now. Are these three guys that you're like diving into at all, or are you nervous about? How do you view them? Are they're all definitely landmines, in my opinion. Which is the least landminey of the three, and which is the most landminey of the three?
I'm glad you grouped them together because I think they're I guess I would say Damian Pierce is the least landminey just because of how his coach talked about him last year. And I know it's a new coach this year, so we'll see. But I think it's a good patch of guys to group together because this is something we've all done commonly where a rookie from the middle or even later middle rounds of the NFL draft impresses as a rookie. And we're like, oh, okay, he's their guy. I'm going to go ahead and draft him as their starter this year. And then their team drafts another guy or signs a free agent, or even if it's somebody that's already on the roster, it just takes touches away from them. We have to remember that there's a reason that all of these guys were middle round picks. And Rashad White was the earliest drafted among them. Tyler Algier was a fifth rounder. Like for Atlanta specifically, 2 years ago, when Mike Davis was there, they were in worse shape at running back and they didn't take anybody in that. We were all watching that draft waiting for them to take a running back. They didn't take anybody. It took Javian Hawkins, I think it was, an undrafted free agent.
There was Javian Hawkins fans, Matt. I remember there was, that was like a fun month before he went undrafted where there was people that really loved him.
Yeah. And then last year it was Tyler Algier was the guy that they addressed their backfield need with in round five. Nobody was excited about him, but he got opportunity. And Arthur Smith has said it's a position where you need multiple guys. So they're going to draft somebody else. It's going to be somebody else that nobody's in love with. And then he's going to take some touches from Tyler Algier. So I think this is a good group that if you don't draft running backs early, then you get here and you take a couple of them, you mix up the exposures to them, see what happens, because they're all in spots where they could be the number one running back for their team, but they're also all in spots where they could be completely splitting the job and be nothing exciting by the time we get to the end of the season.
So Damian Pierce would be your pick of the three if you could have him on your best ball rosters right now.
If I'm picking them straight up, I think it's a little like Rashad White gained some with Leonard Fournette being out of the picture, but I think that also increases the chances of them drafting somebody significant. So I also think it's going to push Rashad White up the ADP board. I don't think we know for sure yet where he's going to settle there. I haven't been in any live drafts the past 2 days to see where he goes. So I think he's climbing, and I think that's going to make me even a little bit less interested. But if I have to, if I'm sitting there, I have to pick one. They're all three on the board. I think Damian Pierce is probably my guy.
JD, who gets the Michael Carter Award of the
That's a great way to put it. See, Michael, it's funny. I think Algier and White might be anchored by the offenses that they're in. Because I'm seeing just Bucks in general. We talked about Godwin earlier. They seem to be valued just because of the question marks at quarterback. We have no idea what's going to happen there. So I do think that Algier and White might kind of sit where they are. You talked about it, Theo. You're not a big fan of what's happening in Atlanta or who's running the show, but guys, Algier looked pretty decent for a fifth rounder. He did show some pass-catching ability with almost 40 targets in his last year in college. He's had over 1,600 yards running the ball. Maybe this is a surprise. He gave you three top 12 weeks in the last 4 weeks and was RB 16 in the last week. I don't know that Atlanta's going to go out there and spend all this money or all this capital on the running back position. Maybe they do definitely, I believe, bring someone in to complement or to help the backfield. But I think Algier's carved himself a nice little role. And I mean, for the price, I like it. I do agree Damian Pierce goes ahead just because he did it longer last year, right? He gave more. You could see him kind of locking up the role that he has in that offense longer. And then because it's Houston, he's, you know, going sixth round. For me, the guys in the sixth to eight, nine rounds, I know they're, like we talk, landmines and they're iffy, but I love getting my RB 2 and 3 out of that group for me. You know, you get your one running back, your stud early, your anchor, and then I like getting my second and maybe even my third in that group or in that range deal.
Yeah, and I think that's a discussion to have because I think, JD, that might be kind of max value drafting right now. Just based on the way wide receivers getting pushed up, it makes sense to take shots on that next group of running backs. It's like the dead zones kind of move down a little bit. So you have less risk taking those guys. You're not risking and it just shows how sharp drafters have become, where you think back to these guys like the Zach Stacys, the Jordan Howards, you know, all those guys that had like the kind of profile Matt brought up, where they would end up being like a second round pick. No one's falling for Tyler Algier being like some fifth rounder right now because he ended the year well. I will say I'm a little more bullish on Rashad White. This week, this last 2 days, all of Twitter is saying to sell Rashad White. I think he's interesting because if he dodges some bullets in the draft and free agency, even if the Bucs offense takes a big step back, he had 50 receptions plus as a rookie. And I think that he's shown enough ability as a receiver that I think he could be a useful player where I might have less concerns about him. And then you talk about draft capital. He was the highest drafted of the three. So Rashad White, if the correction is too much, like Matt brought up, then I'm out. But I tweeted something positive about him recently, and I do believe in him as a receiver. And I think there's a chance he could be like a 200 carry guy with a good amount of targets. And I think he could end up, you know, backdooring his way into an RB2 season next year. So I probably like him the most of the three.
I didn't realize he had so many. That 50 receptions, Theo, as a rookie, well, right? That's pretty money right there.
141 targets to the running back. So, you know, obviously, you know, it was a Tom Brady offense. And, you know, a lot of people have yelled at me about that on Twitter. But, I mean,
James,
come on, man.
James Wright.
The guy catches 50 passes as a rookie. I understand, you know, and Leonard Fournette caught his fair share. So the fact that Fournette's out of there, Tampa Bay could bring in a, you know, obviously if it's a Bijan or Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, they're dusting Rashad White. But if they draft a third round running back who's a more of a you know, a three down rusher as opposed to a pass catching back, I think Rashad White becomes super interesting. So I think that a lot of people are trying to get out from under him in Dynasty. I think that might be the wrong move. And I think he does have some appeal in best ball as well.
Theo, let me jump in real quick because I'm a little late on this. Guys, if you haven't yet and you're listening, like I said, on podcast format, make sure you check us out on YouTube, on Spotify. You can check out the video format. You can get a nice visual of my fresh hairdo, Theo's fresh do, and Matt's just rocking the background. I had to bring it out, Matt. And but
yeah,
guys,
kids artwork.
I'm kidding, man. I love it. If you're following us, like I said, in podcast format, make sure you check us out. And guys, subscribe, like, give us those rate and reviews on whatever platform you're listening to us. It definitely helps us. And check out my FFPC, guys. You see the draft board. You see us bring in these guests, these sharp players. We're all drafting myffpc.com right now. If you're not already on there, make sure you send me a quick email. goatdistrict@gmail.com. We'll hook you up with a sign-up bonus. But guys, myffpc.com, you've got the 125 buy-in for a 25K in best ball tournament. You've got a $35 buy-in for $5,000, a super flex best ball tournament. You've got the main events listed there. You've got basically any type of fantasy that you want to play, dynasty, redraft, or best ball, between $5 all the way up to, what is it? What's the max? I feel like I ask you this every time. Is it 2,500? Or is it five
for the dynasty?
Just overall, what's the biggest buy-in on the site?
5,000.
It is 5,000. Yeah. Okay, it is 5,000. So that's
they have the for dynasty. It's definitely 5,000. And then in terms of a closed league, they might have higher than that. I believe they might have a 10K
with the privates. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, 5,000, 10,000. If you want to draft in those levels, there's no other place than myffpc.com, guys. So appreciate you guys. Make sure you tune in with us this whole off season. We're going to keep bringing in the big guests like Matt tonight. Theo, let's get to it. Have you even talked about your landmine yet, Theo?
There's a few landmines I see kind of in the draft that I brought up. I mean, there's a lot of landmines right now. I think a lot of these running backs, I mean, the running back position right now, I think is the biggest landmine. You have to be very careful on the early draft capital guys, because I think that there's chances that there's a lot more split backfields than people think. And I think that there's a lot of appealing rookies right now that could kind of ruin some of these guys' values. And I think there's some cut candidates out there. We talked about Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon. A lot of these guys could kind of end up in worse situations than they are in currently.
My landmine's in this next round. That's why I'm asking, in the seventh round. So I don't know if you guys want to talk about
I want to try to guess your landmine.
Yeah, you probably know by now.
Well, the landmine in the seventh round is Cortland Sutton. I don't know if that's your landmine.
Yep, that's definitely my landmine. Yep. Yeah. I mean, has he ever done it? You know what I mean? Like I was on team Sutton. Don't ask me why, going in the last season versus Judy. And definitely was wrong on that one. But you look at his stats, I mean, every year, I think he hasn't given anything, right? And then you think, and I put a tweet on this, like, okay, who has he had chucking him the pigskin, right? Like, who's throwing him the football? It's been ugly, let's face it. But at the end of the day, we've seen good receivers produce in bad offenses with bad quarterbacks. We didn't see it last year, even with Wilson coming in. I don't know, Matt, where are you on Sutton? Do you see hope? Or is this just like a major landmine in the middle of the seventh round here?
I've honestly never been a fan of Cortland Sutton. I think he's given us signals along the way that he might just be limited. It goes back to college. If we look at his last season at, what was it, SMU, Trey Quinn transferred there from LSU and immediately beat him in receptions. Then we had Jerry Jeudy outperforming him in two separate seasons now. We had Cortland Sutton arriving via the second round in a draft where one wide receiver went in round one. So that's just, you know, there are these steps where, sure, we've had other wide receivers get drafted later or not have a great college career, Terry McLaurin, and then turn into something. But he came into the league and immediately looked like a number one and then has continued from there. So it's just a matter of compiling those warning signals and then making sure that you don't overlook them or make excuses for them. So yeah, Courtland Sutton to me is just a limited guy.
Yeah, he's not a guy I would feel great about drafting even a round or two later. I think that there's a chance that he really, really falls off this year with the new coaching staff. And I think also the rise of Jerry Jeudy, assuming that they're the Broncos wide receivers this year, I think Judy's going to actually have a pretty big year. But I just don't see Sutton really doing much.
And even more competition with Greg Dulcich and Tim Patrick.
Yeah, Tim Patrick's a great name to bring up because, you know, head-to-head, we've seen almost as much from Tim Patrick recently as we have Sutton. And he's off the board here, certainly. And a guy you can get, you know, in the very, very late rounds in the NTE.
Guys, don't forget Albert O. Come on, man. Don't forget Albert O in that offense. Come on, shined at the end of the season there.
I had one question with the Christian Kirk versus Calvin Ridley ADPs. Where are you at on that, Matt? Which one would you prefer? Right now, they're in the NTE. You're seeing them go a few picks apart. And then in this particular draft, they go right next to one another. In Underdog, we actually see Ridley going higher. FFPC, it's a little bit closer. Where are you at with the Jacksonville wide receivers? Do you think Ridley's the clear one, or do you think that Kirk has now become a value based on, you know, the indecision drafters are showing?
I think they belong together in ADP because we don't know, really. I mean, if I'm guessing between them or grading between them, I think Calvin Ridley is probably still the more talented player. He was drafted earlier. He has a longer career, average depth of target, more production. So I would guess that Calvin Ridley is still the better player. He's also coming off a year away now. He's coming into an offense where Christian Kirk has a year behind him. So that's, you know, there's something there between him and Trevor Lawrence. That said, Christian Kirk also kind of split lead reps with Evan Engram and Zay Jones. So maybe he's just not that lead receiver type. I don't know if Calvin Ridley is that lead receiver type. So really what I want to do is not assume that I know too much about either guy. I think they belong next to each other. I think they went, you know, bottom of wide receiver three territory here. I would mix it up between them, get shares of both of them. And I certainly like Trevor Lawrence enough that I'm happy to stack either guy with him and just trust that either receiver is going to be at least fine for my team with Lawrence as their quarterback.
Give me Kirk here. And I think that in FFPC, you don't really get much of an edge here, but if you're drafting Underdog, you certainly do. I just think the continuity in the offense, we saw enough with Kirk and Trevor Lawrence. And I think it's difficult for some guys to come back after sitting out. So I think it's certainly, to me, It's a little too bullish on where drafters are placing Calvin Ridley. And I think that Christian Kirk last year was, you know, inside the top 20. The year before he was a wide receiver too as well. He's younger than Calvin Ridley, and he has more experience with Trevor Lawrence. So I will take Christian Kirk. You make a good argument that having exposure to both. But I think at the end of the day, it's Kirk for me.
Yeah, it's got to be Kirk. I mean, he was a wide receiver 125% of the time last year. He even gave you a 31.5 fantasy point week. He built that rapport with Lawrence. Lawrence's first true season free to be the quarterback that he is in Jacksonville. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm in my mid 40s, man. You ever jump on that cardio machine you haven't used in a while? Or you ever pick up that kettlebell you haven't picked up in a while and decide, oh, I'm gonna do some squats today. You know, I haven't done squats in a while. It takes a bit, right? To get back in shape, to get away from like the pain that you feel in the next 48 hours after that. And I mean, being off for as long as he has, 2021, only playing 5 games, missing all of last year. To me, I get it. He gave us a top 10 receiver year, and that's always important when looking at receivers, guys that have done it. We talk about it often. I just don't know that he comes in and just slides in as that wide receiver one in this scenario. And I could be completely wrong, and that's fine. But to me, I lean Kirk. I don't think I've clicked the button on Ridley once this year. Again, I'm fine missing out on him.
Yeah, I'm honestly not sure I've drafted either guy yet.
Yeah. Matt, you brought up Evan Engram, who I think is a value right now. Do you view Evan Engram as a value in the Jacksonville offense?
I don't, honestly, because he's inside the top 10. I don't know where he's going to be playing. I know that he indicated that he wanted to stick around in Jacksonville. It certainly makes sense, seemingly, for them to keep him. But there's lots of competition. His week-to-week production wasn't near where his total season numbers were. So where he's going, I would rather wait on David Njoku. I would rather wait on Greg Dulcich later, you know, especially at best ball time where we're stacking up multiple guys. I'm passing on Engram right now, especially because even if he re-signs there, I don't think he's climbing in ADP. So I can still take him later in draft season, I believe, in the same range.
Yeah, it's interesting. You bring up him going to another team. I think this is early drafting. You have to kind of make these decisions. But I think that if he is a Jacksonville Jaguar again, where he's being drafted, I think is fine based on how he ended the season. And it's that offense is super interesting right now. But I think I will take a bullish take on Engram. But you do bring up a good point. If he's not a Jacksonville Jaguar, it's certainly maybe a little bit too bullish of an ADP. You bring up Greg Dulcich a couple times tonight. Maybe talk about him and your appeal of Dulcich and, you know, what you like so much about him.
I mean, he stood out to me in the draft that we have up on the screen because he's tight end 14. So if he's outside the top 12 and he already looked like the kind of guy who could, you know, fairly easily finish inside the top 12 if we get any sort of offense from this Denver team going forward with Sean Payton, then I'm going to go ahead and take a shot on that. The biggest thing with Greg Dulcich is just that he looked the part last year. He was making downfield plays. He was immediately taking target shares away from more veteran players. And he entered the league as that kind of impressive guy. We had Mike Kliss on the Draft Sharks podcast last summer, and he said that he projected Greg Dulcich to pass Albert O and take over as the lead receiving tight end for that team. And we had him on before training camp, I believe it was, or at the very least early in training camp. So he delivered on that. He was an impressive receiver in college. I think that I'm willing to bet on that at the level at which you have to bet on it at this point.
Yeah, I like him a lot as well. And we've certainly seen that Sean Payton guy have some success with tight ends. Jimmy Graham certainly had a number of those big time seasons. And I think we're all bearish on Cortland Sutton. I think that that's an opportunity where Dulcich could be the second leading target, which is what we want out of the tight end position to have big fantasy success. So yeah, I'm totally with you on Dulcich.
Especially with Javonte maybe being a little slower to get back to the game, Dulcich will get some of that short passing game.
100%. And then I like my Chig Okonkwo pick there. Matt, do you have any feelings about him at this point?
Yep, totally agree with you on Chig Okonkwo. The only concern, obviously, is target volume. But at the stage where you're drafting him, you take it, you like the share he got late in the year, and you just see what happens from there. Because he's an exciting rookie. I think there's unanimous support among Draft Sharks guys for Chig Okonkwo right now.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. I always like to be on the same side as Jared with my drafting.
and there are a few guys that we all just agree on, too. There's usually somebody who's like, I don't like him as much as you guys, but you can put him there if you want.
Well, he's got a super cool name to say, right? Like Okonkwo. It just sounds like you're, you know, going to take over, I don't know, it's going to war or something. But no, we talk about, again, narrow target trees, right? We can easily see a very narrow target tree in Tennessee with, you know, Woods gone and who knows, Burks is there, but we don't know who ends up there at quarterback. And it's either going to be the rookie. I don't know that Tannehill even starts there, or they bring someone new, and usually someone new or a young rookie is going to lean on the tight end. So either way, it's favorable for Okonkwo. I love him at his value, especially if maybe you wait a bit on tight end or as a perfect tight end too.
And I would bet on Ryan Tannehill staying the starter, you know, for the moment, for drafting purposes right now, and nobody wants to draft him. So that, if anything, that gives a little bit more to Okonkwo because you can stack Ryan Tannehill very late as your third quarterback.
Yeah, I like Burks a lot where he's being drafted, and certainly Okonkwo I think that the JD, you bring up a narrow target tree. Like Tennessee's going to see what they've got out of Burks and Okonkwo. No matter who they bring in, they yeah. need to lean on those two young second year players. And I think Burks has a big chance to take a step forward. And I think Okonkwo will be a guy that steams up during the summer. He's going to be a guy that has a lot of buzz. The flash plays, he really flashed last year. He can make plays downfield. He's athletic. He's a guy I'm excited about for sure.
Agreed.
Is there, I have one guy that I've got on my list that we haven't hit yet. He's my value. This is like a deep, especially tight end premium. Do you guys have anyone earlier that we haven't talked about yet, on your list, Matt?
No, I'm interested to hear who your guy is now.
All right, here we go.
I mean, I always have guys on the list, but I'm interested to hear your player.
I'm going to Dallas. I don't think Schultz comes back. The tight end position, if they're going to franchise it, sounds like it's expensive. I think it's like $12 million or something like that, $10 to $12 million. So I think Jake Ferguson showed us enough last year as a rookie, 28.2% college dominator, 86th percentile coming out of college. He was taken in the fourth round. But as a rookie, gave you a top eight week, one top 14 week. And guys, round 22 in tight end premium could be the main tight end in Dallas. And Schultz last year, 89 targets in 16 games, 5 TDs, finished as tight end 9 in fantasy points. So I don't think he resigns in Dallas. I think that they're happy with what Ferguson showed them. They've got the other tight end there as well. But I see Ferguson. For some reason, Ferguson just popped off the page for me when I was watching the Cowboys play. And I like what he has to offer. So he's a value, I think, especially, like I said, in tight end premiums. I don't know if you guys have anything on the Dallas tight end situation.
No, I think it's a very good bet to make. And I don't think they'll franchise tag Schultz because I think they're going to franchise tag Pollard. And I don't think they're going to pay Schultz the bag. Dan compared the situation to like an Austin Hooper. Schultz is going to get paid by some team. But he was he's a player that Dak Prescott really made. I think a lot of tight ends can have decent success with Dak Prescott, the way he favors that position. So I think that's a really nice late round guy. Matt, is there any late round guys? We're at $125. Is there any late round guys that you find yourself drafting repeatedly?
Yeah, so we're talking about late tight ends for this tight end premium format. I have Tyler Conklin down on my list. He's tight end 34 in ADP. He finished tight end 20 in tight end premium points per game this past season, and that included 2 games of 20+, another game of 17. We all expect a QB upgrade with the Jets. It's the Jets are right now just deciding who that upgrade is going to be, but it's going to be somebody better than Zach Wilson. So Tyler Conklin, all he has to do is exactly the same as last year with a better quarterback. And he's a tremendous value at the end of these drafts as, I don't know, third, fourth tight end. And really, I think it's part of an intriguing range of tight ends from about tight end 22 down in that never too early tournament MV or ADP. Trey McBride at tight end 22 starts off that range for me. Noah Fant, I think, is going later than he should, you know. Very disappointing last year, but remains a talented guy who was a first round pick. And at that level, you know, he just needs some spike weeks. Jelani Woods is interesting. Dalton Kincaid's interesting in that rookie class. And then along the lines of what JD said, I threw out Hunter Long a little bit ago on Twitter. It's the same kind, similar kind of case. Like, I'm not telling you that Hunter Long is about to become a star, but Miami is probably not re-signing Mike Gesicki. They are not going to have Durham Smythe around, I believe. I can't remember the details on that right now, but I think he's at least a cut candidate. So
Durham Smythe is always a cut candidate.
Right, exactly. They took Hunter Long in the third round a couple years ago. He's done absolutely nothing since then. But if he does anything to impress them this summer, he's somebody that nobody else in the tournament is going to have on their roster. So
is he a good blocker? Because I think their quarterback might need that.
Yeah. Maybe he'll play quarterback this season after two. Yeah.
I think that the rookie tight ends are interesting now because I think that there's a chance that there's multiple rookies drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. And I think there's a chance that there's going to be as many as 5 tight ends off the board by the end of round 2. I think that these guys like Musgrave, Kincaid, Michael Mayer is appropriately being drafted right now in the never too early tournament. I want to say, I'll pull it up real quick, guys.
tight end 20, I believe.
Yeah, Michael Mayer is up to tight end 17.
Wow.
Right now, he's going to be potentially a top 15 pick. You know, that he's almost a can't miss in terms of what we're thinking about fantasy-wise. But some of these other tight ends are very talented. Darnell Washington, Musgrave, Kincaid. Those guys' ADPs are going to shoot up after the NFL draft. And I think right now those guys are all good best ball options. I also think Jelani Woods is an interesting option because he's flashed enough. It was a very crowded tight end room in Indianapolis. Hopefully with a coaching change, they take a look at their second-year tight end. He's the kind of guy that could break out. So I'd be looking
at Woods. Ballard loves those athletic guys too, man. Alec Pierce out there, another athletic freak. So I think they're going to use both of those guys in Indy this year for sure, Theo. I like that call. I know Matt mentioned Wood as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rookie tight ends. That's my late round guys.
Especially like Kincaid down there, because Daniel Jeremiah has him rated pretty decently ahead of Michael Mayer too.
Yeah, I think there's a chance he could get drafted higher than him. I know there was a few injury concerns at the Senior Bowl. I don't know if that lingers, but a couple of these other tight ends like Kraft from South Dakota State, like these guys, it's kind of a transformative year for tight ends in dynasty circles, and I think we want to be ahead of it in our best ball drafts. Mm-hmm.
Matt, this has been a blast, man. We appreciate your time. I know you've been super generous giving us these 90 minutes. And it's funny, we joked about trying to make these shows more digestible and you know, cut them down in time. But we just start talking about, especially when you're looking at draft boards and talking best ball this time of year, it's hard to cut it short. So hopefully the audience got a lot out of this. I know we did. Matt, we appreciate you big time. Everything you do, guys, check out Draft Sharks. Check out Matt's podcast, everything they do over there at Draft Sharks. They've got their ADP. You can get actually FFPC ADP on there. You got all, you guys have your dynasty rankings up already, I noticed. So tell remind the peeps of all the goodness you guys have coming. Maybe give them a little taste of what you have coming up, and maybe let us know what you're excited, one thing that you're excited to see this weekend in the combine.
This weekend, I'm always excited to see the defensive guys at the combine because I get the 40 times in the weights, and I do speed score on the edge players, which I know isn't in a lot of places, and that can reveal some sleepers, some guys that are going to produce for us from the edge spots for IDP leagues. We're going to have projections coming up pretty soon. Jared's working on those. They're going to hit the website, you know, ahead of most other sites. We'll have the draft war room active after that to help everybody with their best ball drafting. And we've got some more best ball tools built into that draft war room for this season. So that's certainly going to be ready to get fired up for everybody who's not already drafting and everybody who is drafting and going to keep drafting through the summer, as I know the three of us are. And I know you said you like having me on. I appreciate you guys bringing me on. It's always fun for me to come on here and talk to guys that I know are doing tons of drafting throughout the year and have lots of experience with this stuff.
I appreciate that, Matt.
Yeah, I appreciate that big time. Theo, I know Kevin and I just did a Ball in Live this past weekend. We're going to hit that up again this coming weekend on Sunday. What do we have coming up in the district?
So next week we'll have Andrew Cooper, who is one of the best tight end analysts.
Speaking of tight end, rookie tight ends, right?
So we're going to talk about these rookie tight ends with him. We're also going to preview, do a little bit of NFL free agency preview. But it'll be very interesting to get Coop's opinion on these rookie tight ends. Coop is like the Matt Harmon of tight ends. He's super sharp with them. He's very good at breaking them down as prospects. And I know he always brings it when he's in the district.
So guys, make sure you tune in, make sure you subscribe on whatever platform you're watching us. Hopefully you enjoyed tonight's shows. We appreciate you guys tuning in, and we'll check you all later.
Go District, you know the Pope listens. Dynasty, our religion, for the blokes missing. On all of these trades, on all of these plays, on all of these grades, by the end of the day, y'all getting played. So, what you gonna do next? Try to fill up that flex, send the homie a text. That trash offer's the best, you try to make it complex. Then they text you back, now all of a sudden they don't make any sense. Broaden your horizons, boy. Dynasty's not for the Simons, boy. These trades not for consignment, boy. Respect your opponent, y'all some piranhas, boy. This my advice from me to you. Open up your cute little podcast queue. Search up GOAT District, my dude. Pop it in your ear, man. Y'all know what to do. It's the And I always be trading, trading, trading. And I always be trading, trading, trading. And I always be trading. Y'all try to betray them, but first you gotta bait them. Bait them, bait them. Fish, fish, fish.